We are going to look at the early influences and mature insights of the man who is often called the Father of Unity. He has also been referred to as a spiritual pioneer, the Missouri mystic, a herald of the New Age, a modern St. Paul, and simply Papa Charlie, as he was well known in the day at the Village. He is, of course, Unity co-founder Charles S. Fillmore. Okay, first trivia question of the morning. You get to take part, choir, okay? What did the S stand for? Who knows? Yes, who got it? Somebody in the back. Yay, very good, Eric. Sherlock. Now, Mr. Fillmore never used the middle name, didn't even use the S, but that really was his given name. So Charles Fillmore was born on August 22nd in 1854 on a Chippewa reservation near St. Cloud, Minnesota, to parents who had come to the wilderness as pioneers. Charles' father, Henry, served as a U.S. government official for the Chippewa tribe, and as Jim Freeman writes in The Story of Unity, Charles Fillmore was born in a log cabin where the only protection against the 40-degree below zero cold of the Minnesota winters was the huge fireplace, which devoured logs at a rate that kept Charles and his younger brother, Nathan, busy throughout the entire winter. The thing is, when Charles was about seven, his parents separated and his father left home, so his mother was left with the two boys. So in the mid-1800s, American education was really in its infancy, and Charles only briefly attended a one-room schoolhouse. And as he later wrote, and these are in his words, "My childhood was romantic, but crude and unprofitable. It was kind of a Huckleberry Finn experience," he said. So Charles and Nathan actually spent a lot of time wandering in and out of the native lodges and teepees just as freely as the Chippewa children did. And the tribes at that time were frequently at war with one another and sometimes with the white settlers. Not surprisingly, I have to add my editorial comment. But before Charles' second birthday, he and his mother were alone in the cabin one night, or one morning actually, when a band of painted Sioux warriors invaded the cabin, snatched young Charles out of his mother's arms, and rode away with him. And you can imagine how terrified she was. They returned him later that evening, unharmed. Charles did not remember anything about it. He was very young, but he always had the sense that somehow they had used him in some kind of a mystical ceremony. So that was kind of an interesting thing that happened to him when he was really young. And James Dillett Freeman notes that Charles' mother, Mary Georgiana Fillmore was her full name. She was the chief force in shaping Charles' destiny. Like her son, she had this great zest for life and very little fear. Good thing, considering where she was living. In the early 20s, she single-handedly raised a family in the wilderness, earning money as a dressmaker to feed and clothe herself and the two boys. She learned to make a sack of beans last for 2 weeks to feed the family, the sources say. It was certainly a struggle sometimes, but Mary Fillmore modeled for her sons the tenacity to press forward through whatever obstacles she faced. Good training. And at age 10, something happened to Charles that really would have a great impact on his life. He had a skating accident, which resulted in him dislocating his hip. Now, medical science was not much better than education in the day, especially in the wilderness, especially on the frontier. In an article entitled Confidentially, Charles wrote, "I was bled, leeched, cupped, lanced, seasoned, blistered, roweled. Six running sores were artificially produced on my leg to draw out the diseased condition that was presumed to be within." Aren't you glad you came this morning for that pre-lunch description? For 2 years, the condition plagued Charles. He was in great, great pain. On good days, young Charles would hop around the cabin on homemade crutches trying to help his mother. And Freeman writes, "The boy did not know what it meant to give up to sickness and disappointment. Probably the spirit of his mother helped him more than anything else, for she fired her son with courage, which if it did not have the power to stop the disease or the infection in his leg, it did have the power to lift the boy's spirits. When after 2 years the disease ran its course, it left a withered leg. One leg was actually 4.5 inches shorter than the other. But it left something else too, Freeman says. It left a vital, determined, courageous spirit. And it was this robust spirit that was to shape the life of the man, Charles Fillmore. Now, Nathan Fillmore, the brother, evidently had enough of pioneer life because he ran away in his early teens, never to be heard of from again. So we don't even know what happened to him. But in his late teens, Charles went to work to help his mother. His first job was as a printer's devil in St. Cloud. There he learned aspects of the printing trade that he would use 30 years later when he and Myrtle started the first Modern Thought magazine. Afterwards, he worked as a grocery clerk and a bank cashier. Now, in St. Cloud, Charles met someone who had a huge impact on his life. Does anybody know who that was? No, not Myrtle yet. That comes later. It was Carolyn Taylor. She was the wife of an Army officer who was stationed in St. Cloud. Carolyn had been to college, which was very rare for women in that day, and she had a great love for classical literature. So Mrs. Taylor took Charles on as a student along with her son. Unlike her own son, however, Charles had a curious and quick mind and was an avid learner. He just soaked everything up. Many nights after work, he went to Mrs. Taylor's to study the works of Shakespeare, Tennyson, Emerson, Lowell, the Bible, and other classics. And he learned to love that beautiful language and compelling ideas. And all of his writings, his many, many books for the rest of his life, would be full of quotations from these literary giants. Not only did Mrs. Taylor help Charles to learn to read and understand great literature, but she would gently also point out his writing errors. And even more importantly than that, Mrs. Taylor was interested in the new ideas from the Transcendentalists that were coming from New England in the day. They were beginning to challenge the dogma of traditional Christianity. And so those ideas just stimulated Mrs. Taylor, and she really stimulated an interest in them in Charles. So that was an early influence. In 1874, when Charles was 19, he went down to the railroad station in St. Cloud and bought a one-way ticket to Texas, where he eventually ended up in Denison. There he began working at the Missouri, Kansas, and Texas Railroad, where he became the chief clerk. And that didn't take him very long to work his way up to that position. As soon as he was able, he sent for his mother. Charles and his mother would be close for the rest of their lives. In Denison, Charles attached himself to a group of educated American pioneers who gathered to discuss literature and philosophy. In the group, in 1876, he met a red-haired schoolteacher from Clinton, Missouri, named Myrtle Page. Now Myrtle comes into the story. And he and Myrtle married in the spring of 1881 in Clinton, Missouri, and immediately set out for Pueblo, Colorado. Actually, Charles had 10 cents in his pocket by the time they arrived in Colorado. And there he worked as a mule driver and as a sayer before going into the real estate business, where he profited greatly. He was really good at real estate. And the couple's first two sons, Lowell and Waldo, were born in Colorado. Now, despite his huge success, really, it was just booming, but despite that, he wrote this. He said, "But I never seemed satisfied with my surroundings or at peace with my work, and the urge to go elsewhere was always within me. Then I had this strange dream. In it, an unseen voice said, 'Follow me.' I was led up and down the streets of Kansas City, Missouri. The presence stopped and said, 'You have work to do here. Know that the invisible power that has located you will continue to be with you and aid you in your appointed work.' So then, after a brief stop in Omaha, Nebraska, the young family headed to Kansas City, where their third son, John Royal, was born. Now, biographers all agree that Charles' vision, abundant energy, and original ideas made him a particularly shrewd businessman. He made a lot of money in Kansas City, buying and selling property, and he played a part in the development of the city. There are more than one street named after Charles Fillmore in Kansas City today. But despite all this success, Charles described himself at age 35 as a chronic invalid, seldom free from pain. He observed Myrtle's prayer process that led to her healing from tuberculosis, and eventually, not right away, but eventually he became inspired by what he called her continued demonstrations. Yet his spiritual path was quite different from Myrtle's. He wrote, "I was much interested and took lessons from all the different schools." And actually, we know that he not only studied all the Protestant religions, he studied Catholicism, but he also studied all of the Eastern religions. And there's influence of them in unity. He says, "For a time, I was disturbed by the conflicting statements, the many conflicting statements of truth made by the various teachers. I noticed, however, that all the teachers and writers, all of them, talked about the omnipresent, omnipotent God who is spirit and accessible to everyone." And he continues, "I commenced sitting in the silence every night and tried to get in touch with God. There was no enthusiasm in it, no soul desire, but just a cold, calculating business method," his words. "In time, however, I tried for months all sorts of ways to realize that my mind was in touch with Supreme Mind. In this cold intellectual attitude, one might understand why I didn't seem to get any conscious results. However," he kept at it month after month, "and mentally affirming the words that others told me would open the way," he says. "Eventually, he began having really detailed dreams and finally recognized those dreams as guidance from spirit. His chronic pain ceased, his hip healed, and his leg actually lengthened. He wrote, "In a few years, I dispensed with the steel extension that I had worn since childhood." So although Myrtle was the catalyst for Charles' spiritual evolution, he really based his work on his own inner work. Once he took it on with great determination. As Neil Vale writes in the story, he said, "I said to myself, in this babble, I will go straight to headquarters. If I am spirit and this God they talk about so much is spirit, we can somehow communicate or the whole thing is a fraud." So that was his motivation for going into the silence every night. And as Neil Vale reports in the book, The Unity Movement, through study, prayer, meditation, and dream analysis, sometime in the late 1880s, Charles developed a strong belief in the reality of the indwelling presence, the divine within. Sitting in the silence became a daily part of Charles' lifetime regimen. There's a cute story about Charles' granddaughter, I think it was Rosemary, who would bring her friends over after school, and there he would be sitting every day in front of the fireplace, and her friends would say, "What is your grandfather doing?" She said, "Oh, don't pay any attention to him. He's just meditating. He does it all the time." So, you know, it was kind of a trademark of his. So the thing is, all Charles' experiences in the silence and meditation led him to embrace inner knowing, which he called the light within. He declared, "If you want inner truths, you must seek them in your own heart." He often referred to this intuitive inner knowing as the spirit of truth. And he taught that there is an intuitive essence within all of us that tells us when we think, when we pray and meditate, maybe when we walk in nature, it tells us what truth really is. For God reveals God's self to every one of us when we open our minds and listen. Listen to the words of being itself. And according to James Freeman, Charles Fillmore was born with an instinctive urge to seek out the meaning of life. And he knew he had to find that meaning in his own soul. He was an advocate of the open, inquiring mind, and all his life he took pride in keeping abreast of the latest scientific and philosophical discoveries and theories. He often said, "I always reserve the right to change my mind." And wouldn't it be wonderful to know what Charles Fillmore would be saying today? I would love to know that. I just think, no telling where he would be today. There's also in the story of Unity a story about how he and Myrtle taught classes, and people would come from all over, and they were always quoting him, and they would say, "Well, it says in, you know, this, da 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 da," and he would say, "Yes, but that's not what I ask you. What do you think? What do you believe? What is your own truth telling you?" He believed that there were certain things that were absolute truths, but he also believed that we each would find them through our own inner self. So he came to believe over time that it was his mission to foster new spiritual enlightenment in all of humankind, to help all men and women have a better understanding of spiritual truths and to live by them. He really believed that religion, Christianity, any faith should be practical. We won't wear it like a Sunday cloak, but it should help us with all of our life's problems and situations. "Our aim," he wrote, "is to spread over all this great West the good which we know lies in wait for those willing to receive it. The world must be reformed. The work is ours, and we must not shrink from it. The question is," he said, "how can we best help humanity out of the darkness of mistaken concepts?" So instead of focusing on human weakness and what other faiths were calling sin, what I like to call being scum-sucking sinners, right? Instead of focusing on that, Charles focused on human strengths and powers, the powers that come from the divinity within. And he had one of the earliest radio shows in Kansas City, in the United States actually, from Kansas City, and actually the first spiritual show, a radio show, and often he would invite fundamentalist preachers to debate him on the Sunday mornings. And the records show he won debate after debate by telling his opponents that he loved them and he saw God in them, and nobody had anything to say to him after that, according to the records. Throughout his ministry, and in partnership with Myrtle, of course, Charles Fillmore devoted incredible time and energy describing the nature of God. Remember, we've been talking about metaphysical truths, and two questions that metaphysicians always ask: what is the nature of God, and what is the nature of humankind? And Charles spent a lot of time talking and thinking about that. He believed the power and presence of God was limitless and transcendent. He wrote, "God is spirit," that's actually his favorite Bible verse, which is "Christ in you, your hope of glory." And he said, not only is that his favorite Bible verse, but it also, he said right before his death, were the most important words in the world to him. So that was important to him. He also wrote, if I can find the right slide, I don't have that slide. Where did that slide go? Here we go. He wrote, "God is spirit, the universal mind in whom we live and move and have our being. Spirit is omnipotent," meaning all power, "omniscient," meaning all knowing, and "omnipresent," meaning everywhere present, including within humankind. Charles Fillmore was highly critical of traditional Christianity's efforts to make God into a person. You know, there's that old saying, which is true, that God created us in his image and likeness, and we've been trying to repay the favor ever since. Well, Charles Fillmore was against that. He said, "Let us dismiss the idea that God is a man. This erroneous teaching has led to a belittlement of God and left little room in the human mind for the true concept of the divine and the principles from which all blessings flow." And Charles Fillmore taught that God is actively, fully present within every single man and woman. He wrote, "God is not an exclusive being, nor does he dwell in inaccessible places apart from his creations. God is around you, about you, and within you. You are God yourself in a sense. Ignorance has blinded you to your true self." Okay, this is going to be a really hard question. Does anybody know what his favorite Bible verse was? Okay, say it with me. Christ in you, your hope of glory. So as he that is something that he tried to spread to everyone, that internal divinity is within. And this is my favorite of all Charles Fillmore's quotes. I think it's amazing. He wrote, "It is your mission." Now let's just really take these words into our hearts and souls, because this is powerful. "It is your mission to express all that you can imagine God to be. Let this be your standard of achievement. Never lower it, nor allow yourself to be belittled by the cry of sacrilege. You can attain everything you can imagine. If you imagine that it is possible to God, it is also possible to you. This is the law. Let none belittle himself or dwarf the supreme by trying to annul it." So Charles and Myrtle Fillmore were a powerful spiritual team. In March of 1931, Ernest Wilson led them in renewing their wedding vows, and shortly afterwards, they celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. Myrtle made her transition in October that same year, and Papa Charlie Fillmore, as he was known to the worshipers he addressed for nearly 40 years, stepped down from the Unity pulpit on December 31st, 1933, a little over 2 years after Myrtle's death. Later that day, he married his secretary, Cora Diedrich, who then became Cora Fillmore, of course, and she was also a Unity minister. Cora became a co-author and collaborator with Charles, and she was actually responsible for collecting and organizing so many of his unwritten papers. Many of the things in the archives today are because of Cora Fillmore. And when Charles was 93 years old, he famously said, "I fairly sizzle with zeal and enthusiasm and spring forth with a mighty faith to do all the things that ought to be done by me." Zeal in action, right? Charles and Cora actually traveled all over the country spreading the Unity message. And when he got a chance to, he loved to relax at the Unity farm, being with his grandchildren and playing golf. There he is in the upper left-hand picture playing golf on the golf course at Unity Farm, now Unity Village, of course. Charles Fillmore made his transition in 1948, leaving an incredible legacy. Who would have ever imagined that a child born in a log cabin in the wilderness with little formal education or spiritual training would be the one to help generations of us realize the powers in our own souls and live what Jesus taught, the word you see every time you walk in the front door, and that is, say this with me too if you will, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." So today, as we honor all of the earthly fathers who are still with us and those who are made their transitions and father figures who've shaped our lives, let's not forget to honor Papa Charlie. So now let's take a moment to just affirm the great truth about our God that is being said in Unity churches all over the world today. And you can say it with me. This is printed in your bulletin for those of you who are here for the first time. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.